Welcome. You've arrived at Destination on the Left with Nicole Mahoney. Learn from the experience of travel and tourism experts who use collaboration and creativity to attract more visitors, strengthen their marketing programs, and reimagine how their industry does business.
Hello, listeners. This is Nicole Mahoney, host of Destination on the Left. Welcome to this week's episode with another exceptional guest, keynote speaker, and performance coach, Carol Lumpert. I invited Carol on the show to share her expertise in leadership, presentation, and communication skills. You may have heard me talk a time or two before about the power of collaboration. In fact, I believe in collaboration so much that I tested my theories on the impact of it by commissioning a research study to find out how important collaboration will be for the travel, tourism, and hospitality industry as we start to recover from the COVID-19 crisis. 90% of study respondents told us that they believe collaboration will be critical to recovery. With this in mind, I have been on a mission to figure out how to help you, the professionals in the industry, to be better collaborators. One area where I know we can all benefit from improvement is how we communicate with others, and specifically how we engage with others as part of a collaborative team. Carol is a trained actress who shares her performance secrets with executives to help them improve their presence and supercharge their careers. In this interview, Carol shares many of these techniques with us, including how to sound and look confident, how to pitch an idea, and how to use high-gain questions to make stronger connections and create better collaborations. This is the first interview where my guest practices what she is teaching with me live on the spot. I know you will enjoy the exercise where we demonstrate how listening can lead to a deeper understanding of someone's values and what is really important to them. A little more about Carol. She is a sought-after leadership expert, having been quoted in Forbes, Financial Post, National Post, The Reader's Digest, and Thrive Global. Carol teaches executives to tell better stories, increase their executive presence, improve their personal brand, and build more resilience. Typically, companies bring her in to help them fill their leadership pipelines. And her clients include Google, Marriott, American Express, Travelers, and the Harvard Executive Education Program. Yes, that Harvard. Carol says her mom is too proud. In a nutshell, Carol Lumpert supercharges executive presence and careers with the performance secrets actors use to light up the screen. Get ready to learn, but first, I want to share this important message with you.
Listeners, I wanted to tell you about a new tool that my team has developed to help you gain clarity on your path to recovery. We recently put together a free infographic outlining the 7 steps that you should take now to create your 2021 marketing plan. This tool summarizes our proven strategic planning process in full transparency, and it's available for download now. Visit breaktheicemedia.com/infographic to download. That's breaktheicemedia.com/infographic and start planning your roadmap to recovery today.
Carol, thank you so much for joining us today. I am so excited for the conversation that we're about to have. But before we get started, can you share a little bit about yourself and your journey with our audience? I just find it adds so much more context to our conversation.
Yeah, thank you for asking about that. I'm really delighted to be here. Morning. If your listeners go to my website, which I hope maybe after they hear our conversation, they might be motivated to do, on my website, what it will say is that I supercharge executive presence and people's careers. And the way that I do that is with the performance secrets that actors use to light up the stage and the screen. My background is as an actress. And I got into doing the work that I'm currently doing, working with Fortune 500 executives about their executive presence, helping them have better communication skills, better presentation skills, and recently, since the pandemic, how to have better skills for resiliency and building organizational resiliency. And all of that is informed by my theatrical background. So how it all came to be was more than 20 years ago, I got a phone call one day from my brother and he's like, "Sis, get over here." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I hop in my car and I drive over and I get there. And when I get there, what I find out is his best friend, Lance, is in the washroom, sick as a dog. And I'm like, Sheldon is my brother. I don't know what's going on, but this looks like a 911 situation. I don't know why he called me. And what I came to learn is that poor Lance, he's at his very first grown-up job. He'd graduated maybe 7 months before, and he's working at an accounting firm, Pricewaterhouse, before Coopers came along. And he was tapped on the shoulder to give a presentation to his boss's boss about the project that he was working on. And he was so full of anxiety. He was having a panic attack and he didn't know what to do. So he went to his best friend, my brother, and he's like, "Hey man, I don't know what to do." And my brother's like, "I love you, buddy, but I work in construction. I don't know anything about giving a presentation, but my sister's an actress. She can help." And so in that moment of inspiration, my brother handed me a career on a silver platter and he didn't even realize it. So I worked with Lance. I got him ready. He went off and he did his presentation. It went really well. And I thought did my brother a favor. Like, that was it at the moment. And then several months later, I got a phone call from a friend of Lance's who said, "Hi, you don't know me. I'm a friend of Lance. He's now a high potential at our company. Could you do that for me too?" And I was like, I didn't even know how to price it. I was working as a temp for like $7 an hour. I had no idea this was a thing, but I discovered it was a thing. There's these departments in big corporations. Many of your listeners probably are aware of them, called learning and development. So I took 2 years off my acting career and I went back to school to be certified as an executive coach and adult educator. And for the last 20 years, I've had a foot in both worlds.
I love that. So what I'm excited about is for our audience to learn from you today, because you just might be the first actress that I've had on the show. I did have an opera singer.
Well, that's similar. Yes, performers.
Exactly, but performance. And what I'm excited about is to learn from you where these connections happen. And even before we get into that, the other thing that I find very interesting about the conversation we're about to have is that a lot of our listeners are, you know, from the world of travel, tourism, and hospitality.
Yeah.
And so I know a number of them touch theater or live performance in some way, usually in promoting it or, you know, putting it in part of an itinerary for travel. So it'll be interesting to kind of get this behind the scenes look and to see what we can learn, you know, from an actress from that world. So I'm excited about that. And as we dive in, Carol, I'm wondering if you can just give us an overview of some of the connectivity that happened for you when you were, you know, becoming this executive leadership coach and pulling those threads from your, you know, from your acting career. What are some of those threads that you pulled over?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that. So the first most logical one, based on the story that I've just shared with you, is straight up presentation skills. Actors stand on a stage in front of an audience and they give a performance. Many, many, many people at work have to stand on a corporate stage in front of a corporate audience and give some kind of presentation. And even if they're not standing on the town hall stage in front of hundreds of people at the company, they have to go to meetings with their colleagues and present their ideas. So they have to pitch their ideas in the same way that an actor has to go to an audition and try to win over a part. Many of the skills that you need to show up sounding confident, looking confident, thinking on your feet to manage the Q&A after the presentation. Often the presentation goes very well because you've been able to prepare it ahead of time, and then you open it up for questions at the end and thoughts and reactions from your colleagues. And if you don't have the skill of improvisation to be able to think on your feet and answer those questions in the moment, often what will happen is that the presentation might go fantastic. Everybody thinks it's great, but by the end, you've sort of lost the ball and you don't get buy into your idea because you haven't thought ahead about what's important from the audience's perspective and you can't manage the Q&A. So presentation skills for sure in one bucket. The concept of having executive presence, which I define in four different dimensions. So stage presence and executive presence have a lot of crossover in terms of skill. Presence isn't just something that you won the genetic lottery and you're born with it and you have it or you don't. It really is something that can be cultivated. Actors go to theater school for 4 years to cultivate it, but business people need to cultivate it as well if they're going to move ahead in their careers. There's quite a lot of research that says if there's two people up for a promotion and on paper they are identical in terms of their qualifications, the person that will be offered the job 26% of the time, according to research from the Center of Innovation, a not-for-profit here in New York, will go to the person who's seen as having quote-unquote executive presence. So that's seen as these four dimensions. The first is being in the moment. The heart of the word presence is being present in the moment, so that you and I are having a conversation right now. And I know it's part of a podcast. And so I'm not also checking my email at the same time, because I wouldn't have my head in the game to really give you my full attention and my full expertise in the questions that you're asking. Well, in business, often people are multitasking two and three things at a time, and they miss things as a result of that. And then they're asked to repeat, and it wastes everybody else's time. It diminishes their own executive presence, and it also annoys other people because people aren't paying attention to the thoughts and ideas. So that first dimension is being in the moment. The second dimension is, what do people see when they look at you? Do they see someone who is comfortable in their own skin? Or do they see somebody that's walking around with a little bit of anxiety, either because they're afraid their boss won't like their thoughts or ideas, or they just are uncomfortable talking in front of a room? And that bleeds into their message. If you sense anxiety from somebody, you as a listener become anxious about their message just unconsciously. And so you're not going to buy into it as easily. So that's the second dimension. What do people see? The third dimension is, what do people hear when they're in conversation with you? And I know that you are in the process of writing a book and that one of the chapters is around communication. So this dimension of executive presence is right in the sweet spot of the thing I know you're interested in communication. Are you really interested in the other person's point of view, or are you waiting for the other person to stop moving their lips so that you can get your thought or idea in? Because then people feel it's not authentic conversation and relationship is not built that way. And the last dimension of presence is, how do people feel? And I don't mean how they feel about you. I mean, how do they feel about themselves after they've had an interaction with you? When you talk to your boss, do you leave feeling like your boss believes in you and he trusts you or she trusts you and you feel energized because you've gotten some good advice and guidance and attention? Or do you leave because you've been asked a million questions? Oh, my boss doesn't think I know what I'm doing. And you leave diminished and feeling nervous, and sometimes nervous that you might not do well at your next performance review and you might get fired at any minute. So those are the four dimensions that really pull through from the theater into corporate work.
Yeah, I think those are really, really great lessons, actually, that you are already teaching us today. And that being in the moment just really struck a chord for me, especially when you talked about the multitasking, because I know there's so many people out there that try to multitask. I've certainly been in meetings, several meetings, where people are multitasking, especially right now when we're all on Zoom. Yeah. And so it's easy to be distracted right now. And so I think that that's just such a great point to think about. And I believe all of these four dimensions that you just shared with us all impact, you know, our ability to communicate, and specifically what you are starting to allude to, which is one of the things I really wanted to dig into, is as it comes to being part of a collaborative team, which is something that I'm extremely interested in. And as you mentioned, writing a book about. And I know one of the key elements to being effective in a collaboration is communication. So I would love to have you share a little bit more about, you know, your insights on communication and how that affects a team. Because even when I'm thinking about a collaborative team, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily an internal team. It could be a team of collaborators between other organizations. So there's several, you know, companies or organizations that are coming together and creating something that's bigger than they can do on their own. And so I'm curious, you know, there may not be like that natural leader, perhaps. There might be people with different roles on this team. And so I'm curious about how, you know, thinking about what do people hear? How do people feel? If I'm in a collaboration, how are some of the ways that I can kind of demonstrate that or utilize that?
Well, I think your insights around the fact that collaboration and communication are really closely tethered is spot on. So from an actor's perspective, what happens is you go to an audition. It's like going to a job interview. Everybody who is cast in the play has gone to the same job interview. And so you're in a cast with 12 other people who you've never met before. And on the very first day of rehearsal, you're tasked with collaborating, because from the first day of rehearsal until opening night, which is usually 4 or 6 weeks later, we have to have a finished saleable product that people will want to spend $100 on a ticket to come and see. So we need to be able to communicate and collaborate to execute on creating our project. In our case, it will be a play. It will be a performance. But this is the same thing in any industry. In the travel industry, if you're collaborating, if you, let's say, are a hotel and you're going to collaborate with an airport to get people physically to fly from their location to your location where the hotel is, you need to be able to collaborate with the other people in the industry so that your guests, in my case, I would say the audience, so your guests will have a wonderful time when they get there and they're willing to fork over money, you know, for that experience. And so the very first day of rehearsal, what the director will do is be very explicit about what the expectations are for how we're going to run rehearsals. In this case, you might say, run your project. Mm-hmm. And there'll be, and different directors have different things that are important to them. So if you are the person that is running the meeting, or you might be tasked with running and facilitating the project itself, I think it's very important for leaders or people who are leading the meeting at the very beginning, be very explicit and clear with what the expectations are. So work expectations might be things like, we start on time. And if you're 2 minutes late, you will miss the first 2 minutes of the meeting. We're not going to be sitting around waiting for everybody, because if there's 10 people showing up at the meeting and we start 2 minutes late, that's 10 times two, you know, there's 20 minutes that we've just wasted. That's company time that's being paid for. So you can be explicit about that. You can be explicit about one person talks at a time. We're not going to overtalk. If somebody starts before you, I'll make sure that you're in line to be the next person to speak. But Nicole will go first, Joanne will go second, and Suzanne will go third. One person speaks at a time. Nobody raises their voice. There's nothing so important here that anyone is going to die as a result of what we're talking about. So if you're starting to feel really emotional, we'll just pause and we'll take a break. Whatever the culture is that you're in, be really clear with those expectations at the beginning. So the same thing that a director does for an actor. So the first thing will be everybody shows up on time. Everybody stays in the rehearsal room when we're rehearsing all of the scenes. Pay attention to what's going on in the scenes that you are not in, so that when we get to the scene that you are in, you understand what happened before. Now, different directors have different expectations around that. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, several of these things I want to do, they're more intimate. I want to do them privately. So Carol, you'll be called at rehearsal at 10 o'clock and Scott, you'll be called at rehearsal at 11 o'clock. So you just are really clear about what the expectations are. And when people understand what is expected of them, it is easier for them to show up and be in the moment and feel safe with their colleagues and have a good collaboration. So that would be the first thing that I would say. The second thing that comes to mind is that when you are then in conversation and in rehearsal for an actor, the conversation is, how do we bring these words on this page to life in a way that the audience believes that I'm not Carol Lempert playing a character, that I'm actually the character? So there's lots of conversation and communication that has to happen around how that's going to happen. Well, same thing in business. You're going to pitch a marketing idea, and eventually the marketing idea is going to be consumed by someone on the highway driving by looking at a billboard. So we want to pitch that idea in a way that we think that it's going to be believable and viable and interesting for someone in their car driving down the highway looking at the billboard. When I pitch that idea, let's say you're my colleague in the meeting, I then have to wait and hear your response to that idea before I'm going to get buy into that idea. So that you give your own thoughts and you give your own point of view, and then you open it up with an open question to the people in the room. What does everybody else think? What are your thoughts? And asking it in an open way so people feel like they can respond creates a collaborative environment, as opposed to asking it in a closed way. So I might pitch an idea to you and then I could say, well, don't you think that's a good one? I'm forcing you to say yes or no, as opposed to you're reacting with what your own thoughts and reactions are that resonate with you about the idea. Or here's my thought or idea. Isn't it great? So I'm forcing you to have to say yes. I've heard lots of the versions of these kinds of questions from leaders. They want to force a yes, which if they're the boss, people will agree usually because they have power over them. But when they go back to their desks, they're not always so inclined to, you know, move forward with the project. That's how you get passive aggressive behavior in business.
That's such a great point. This idea of open-ended questions and or leading questions versus the leading question. And this idea of if you're forcing the yes and you don't truly have the buy-in, you're not going to be as effective in terms of trying to implement your idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you just pointed out you end up with this passive aggressive behavior. I mean, people just kind of, they're kind of like a toddler, right? When you tell a toddler what to do and they don't want to, they kind of storm off and don't really want to do it. So dig their heels in a little bit deeper, right? So how do you stop yourself from asking those, you know, leading or closed questions? Because I imagine sometimes people don't even realize they're doing it.
Mm. If the question can have a yes or no answer or a one word answer, it's closed. The way to have an open question is to start with the word what or the word why. And you just asked me a question that started with the word how. How makes me elaborate on how something is done. What opens it up for me to go anywhere with the question? And why has me elaborate on my thoughts and justifications for why I think it's a good idea? So words like did you, is, was this, those end up being closed. Those kinds of words end up being closed. The answers will be closed.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great rule of thumb. And I love how you just framed out what, why, and how. So why digs a little bit deeper into how someone feels, because you're asking them maybe why they did something or why their idea is this way. And what is, to me, is asking maybe for more clarification or to expand on
exactly
a thought. And then how is to also explain a little bit more in a different way. Is that right?
Yes. And so that, is that right? That was a closed question.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you can never ask a closed question. Closed questions are great to confirm that you understood something, which is what you just did with me.
Mm.
I want to give caution about why questions. If you start with why questions, they can trigger defensiveness. So I tell my boss, I made a decision to do XYZ. And if the first thing out of my boss's mouth is, oh, why? Then I'm going to feel defensive, like, uh-oh, he thinks I didn't do it for a good reason. So you can pivot a why question to a what question, which would sound like this. I tell my boss I've just executed on XYZ, and my boss says, oh, what do you think the impact of that's going to be? As opposed to, oh, why? You can hear the difference in tone.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also know that as we're talking about questions can really engage people. So we just talked about, pitching an idea. We want it to be believable, viable, and we want buy-in. So we're going to ask questions to get feedback on our idea, but also asking questions brings people into the idea. Am I following you right? Like, I'm feeling like it's going to bring people into your idea and maybe even help build on the collaboration all together.
Yes. Here's a really powerful question, especially if you're the person pitching the idea or if you have authority in the meeting because you happen to be the boss or the leader. You pitch your idea and then say, our goal is XYZ. So this idea is meant to help with XYZ. What have I missed? Mm. And then it opens up people's thinking to all the different other things that we could include surrounding the idea.
Mm.
What are your thoughts is one way. What are your reactions is another way. But what have I missed really opens up a lot more brainstorming and a lot more ideas. And as you say, can pull people closer into the idea because then they're scaffolding and building their own thoughts and ideas on top of the original idea.
Yeah, I love that question. What have I missed? Because I can see, and I've been in situations before where people have said, what are your thoughts? Which I'm processing, I'm thinking, I'm listening, and I'm putting my thoughts together, but my thoughts could be, well, I really like your idea, and it doesn't necessarily expand on it. By saying, what have I missed, forces me to think more about the idea. Even if I like it, you're asking me intentionally to expand on it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. That's really powerful. I love that one. So Carol, you and I spoke before this interview, and you were telling me about other types of questions that you called high gain questions. And I was very intrigued about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So could you share a little bit about high gain questions, what they are and how they work?
High gain questions are questions that get your listener to think deeply about the topic at hand. So our topic at hand here is collaboration. I could ask, why is collaboration so important to you? And then you would tell me why collaboration is so important to you. A high gain question might be, when in your career did you experience a moment where collaboration was falling apart and you realized that collaboration is the singular most important thing for success for a project?
Mm-hmm.
That question is high gain because you're going to tell me a story in response. When in your career did this happen? Then I'm going to get the fulsome experience of what you went through to come to the conclusion of the learning that this idea that collaboration is important, as opposed to just the justification about why collaboration is important.
Yes, I think that is such a great point because I think our tendency and my tendency would be to say, you know, Carol, why is collaboration important? And then you kind of do just go to that, as you said, justification. It's important because of X, Y, and Z. But to ask the question about where in your career or on your journey, did you actually have this realization or did you have an experience that proved it was important, gets me some more insight into who you are as Carol Lempert and kind of your own journey.
Exactly. In the travel industry, what are the kinds of questions that you might need to ask each other if you're planning on a collaborative project together?
I think some of the questions that our listeners might be thinking about, so they might be collaborating, let's say, as a matter of fact, I was just reading an interview I had done with someone recently that had talked about a craft brewery trail. And they talked about how these craft brewers came together and created the trail from scratch, started with just 16 of them. And they decided that by connecting the dots for the visitor, it would be easier to market. So I could see in that meeting where they were brainstorming on this idea, how do we get more visitors collectively than we can get on our own, needing to understand exactly what the different breweries were looking for could be, you know, some of the things that they had to explore. What are their collective experiences like? What are the differences between the experiences at each brewery? Are there days that they're all open at the same time? You know, so there could be operational style questions, and then there could also be just brand kind of essence experience type questions.
Yes. So all of those are essential questions and foundational to be answered. Some of them are high gain and some of them are not. What are the times that you're open versus I'm open? That's important data and important information. That's not a high gain question. And it's not even an open question. What time are you open? 9 to 5. That's the answer, right? That's kind of a closed answer. If the bigger question, though, as you're spelling it out, is how do we get more visitors? That's the problem that we're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. The high gain question has to be around the visitors and the visitors' experience. So a question in the room to each other could be, what is a time in your own life that you were so excited to go have an experience that you rearranged it and planned it? That's how you get more visitors. Mm-hmm. If you can answer that question, all the other questions are just logistics.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to entice people? What's going to get them excited? Is it around lifestyle events, bachelor parties, weddings? Is it around graduations? Is it around divorce? So what are the moments in someone's life that they're going to be excited to want to rearrange everything and come on a brewery? So the high gain is, when did that happen in your own life? When did you see other people do it? What are other experiences that we've planned together that are a little bit like this experience that we can borrow the learnings? Those are more high gain.
Those are great examples. I really appreciate you putting me on the spot like that and have, you know, and doing this practice, because I think it's definitely an important one. So here's another example. Let's do one more of these. So you would have, in the region where I live here in the Finger Lakes of New York State, there are 14 counties in this region, and the region itself is 9,000 square miles. So it's like the size of the state of New Jersey. It's very large. But this large region markets itself collectively. And so the way they do that is there are destination marketing organizations from each of those 14 counties, and they come together once a month and they meet and they talk about ways that they can help each other and ways that they can market. So the goal again is to bring in visitors. But what would be some high gain questions then that they could be thinking about, you know, is this large regional collective trying to figure out how do we market ourselves? We're this large region with 14 different partners. So how do we get to know each other better so that we can find that kind of commonality to be able to really shine, sort of like what you just talked about with the experience. Is it the same kind of thing, or do you think it could be a different thread that they could pull on?
I do think it's the same kind of thing. What's materializing in my mind is more of a workshop. So I might ask each region, before we have the collaboration conversation, make a list of pros and cons about your region. If someone came to visit your particular county, what are the pros and what are the cons? So we would have a list of what's special about each region and what are maybe some of the things that are deficiencies about each region. And then we would post those all around the room and we would see where the crossovers are. How does this region connect with that region? How does this region connect with that region? So that next step would be the high gain. How do we amplify each other? Where are areas that you're strong and I'm weak and I'm strong and you're weak? And then we could collaborate together doing something where someone would spend half the day in your region and then they would get in their car and drive 10 minutes over to my region and do this other thing. So thinking about the pros and cons sometimes is a way for high gain. That's one piece that occurs to me. But I think that the unspoken question that we haven't touched on at this moment in time on March the 24th, 2021, as we're re-entering in a post-pandemic life, the high gain questions I think have to be around what are the things that are going to hold people back from getting in their car and going anywhere because of the pandemic? And what are the messages that we can communicate out there that it's going to be safe and it's going to be fun? And it might even be different than what it was in the before times. We're going to reinvent it to be this whole other new thing. Or what are the things that people have been missing for the past 12 months, deeply missing? And those are the things we might go to market with.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because that certainly is what a lot of our listeners are struggling with right now is, you know, who is going to want to travel? How far will they travel? And what are the first things that they're going to want to do? And these are ways to really think about that and frame that. So what are the things that might hold people back? Or what are the things that people have been missing for the last, you know, 12 months at this point?
And I'll up that first one that you just said, who would want to travel right now? Implicit in that question is that most people don't yet want to travel. So the high gain question is, what can we build into our marketing message that will entice people to want to travel?
Right.
So let's not just default to the fact that there's a bunch of people that aren't even going to want to. We need to entice them. What can we do to entice them that it's safe to leave the house? And when you come here, you're going to have an incredible experience. You're going to go home with a great memory and you won't be sick.
Right. That's important. That's what we want to know. Absolutely. No, I think that's really, really excellent. So I want to talk a little bit about these high gain questions also in terms of developing the rapport among your collaborators. And I'm curious, you know, we're asking high gain questions that are solving the problem, which is bringing us together around an idea or developing an idea. But what happens when you're around the table with people who maybe have different skill sets in communication or different, you know, ways that they approach questions or brainstorming or idea sharing? And so I'm curious, you know, when I pose it to you in that way, in terms of building the relationship among the team, what are your thoughts around that?
I'm going to propose that we do an exercise that I often do in a workshop.
Okay.
And it's to demonstrate that there's different levels of listening. Collaboration and communication deepens when the receiver of the information is listening deeply enough so that the next thing that they respond with, which is either their reaction to what they've heard or the next question, moves the conversation to a deeper place. Here's the exercise. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to tell me your perspective on self-driving cars. And then I'm going to share my perspective on self-driving cars. And then we'll go back and forth a little bit on the topic of self-driving cars. And then afterward, I'm going to check in and ask you what your thoughts are about what you heard me say. Is that okay?
Okay.
So what is your opinion about self-driving cars?
Right now, they're very mysterious to me, actually. I've heard a lot about them. I've read about them. I hear that the technology is coming fast. And that will be, they are actually even out there in the world, but I haven't actually seen them myself. So it's been hard for me to have a a formalized opinion kind of makes me think about like the Jetsons, right? From growing up. But at this point, I don't really have a lot of information. So it seems very mysterious.
I think that is true for a lot of people. I am quite tickled by the idea of self-driving cars. And part of the reason I'm tickled by that is that I don't find driving an enjoyable thing to do. I know that there are many people in the world that like driving. I am not one of those people. Mm-hmm. And if I could go from point A to point B, and as we re-enter and get back to life, I imagine that there will be more opportunities to go from point A to point B in my car. If I could use all the time that I used to sit in the car driving and read a book or come up with an idea for a play or just work on my to-do list, that just always seemed like lost time to me, that a self-driving car would be an opportunity for me to get all of those hours back and do other productive kinds of things. I think it's fantastic. Okay, so we just had a conversation about self-driving cars. What did you hear? What did you hear me say?
I heard you say that you don't enjoy driving. So anything that can help you solve that problem, a self-driving car, and give you time back while you're being transported from point A to point B is, in your book, a positive thing. Actually, you used the word fantastic.
Go ahead. There's more. Go ahead.
Well, I would also point out, though, I was also thinking one thing that stood out to me as you were talking is that you talked about how you feel about driving. I didn't talk about how I felt about driving. Mm-hmm. So in my own brain, I thought, oh, well, I have something I could add to that because I actually like to drive. And there are things I do when I drive. I haven't been driving a lot since the pandemic that I miss. So it's interesting that.
Yes. So if the conversation had gone on longer, you might have added that other layer to it. Mm-hmm. And then we would have transitioned the conversation away from just the cars and into the bigger topic of driving itself. Mm-hmm. And that would have been another interesting layer of the conversation. Mm-hmm. What you just did for me when I said, so what did you hear me say? You paraphrased back to me what I had said to you. When we are in collaboration with each other to improve our communication with each other, if you paraphrase back to the other person what you hear them say, as you just did to me because I asked you to, but if you just did it anyway, what happens for the listener is they feel heard and important and acknowledged. It is fascinating how interesting I will think you are when you are interested in me. And the technique to do that is paraphrasing back what you hear the other person say. And then it buys you time to think about what you might want to add on, which is what you just did. Oh, it made me start thinking about the fact that unlike you, I actually like driving and I miss driving. And that's how we have a richer conversation. So one layer of listening is exactly what the person said. Reflect that back to them to let them know you understand where they're, not just that you heard the words, you actually understand where they're coming from and you paraphrase their language back to them. And then you can build on it to take the conversation to another level. So that's one layer of good communication. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to ask you another question. What might you guess my values are based on my opinion about self-driving cars? What's important to me?
Yeah. So you value things like your craft, working on your craft. As an actress, you talked about writing scripts or reading a book or checking off your to-do list. So to me, you're a very productive person because you have a to-do list that you want to make sure you're checking off. But you do every once in a while like to relax and read a book. And you also enjoy working on your craft. Those are the three things I picked up on.
Thank you. You're an excellent listener. So that those three things that you just reflected back to me have nothing to do with self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. If you're listening at the deeper level of, I also want to build relationship with this person and mm-hmm. listen to the kinds of things that are important to them, you now know those things are important to me. And as we build our collaboration together, you might be able to leverage that information in the future as we're working on other different things. Mm-hmm. So you can listen at deeper levels. You can listen to what we're actually talking about, and you can also listen at the level of what is important to the other person. People will always reveal their values when they share their point of view about any topic. Mm. What you shared with me is that this whole self-driving car thing is kind of mysterious. You've heard about it, you've read about it, but you haven't seen it yet on your own. And so you're sort of withholding judgment until you actually lay your eyes on it yourself. And I think what I've gleaned from that, as I'm getting to know you, is that you are a very sensory stimulated person. You like to collect data. Once you have all of the data collected, you will weigh what all of that means together and you will have an informed opinion. You're not just going to shoot off an opinion without enough information.
That's very good.
I'm checking in. Is that true about you?
That is true about me. Yeah. That's so interesting.
So I now know that about you, not because I said, tell me what your values are. I know that about you because I listened at a deeper level to your opinion about a topic that's kind of random, happens to be self-driving cars. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. This is the first time we've done an exercise like this on the show.
Oh,
Carol.
Okay.
Well, that's fun.
When I do a coaching with my clients on executive presence, this is on the dimension of what do people hear that I introduced earlier. These are the kinds of things that I do with my clients. Yeah.
Oh, it's fabulous. That's really great. I'm really kind of astounded that you pulled that out of what I said about self-driving cars, because certainly when I was talking about self-driving cars, I wasn't thinking about my values. I wasn't thinking like, you know, I believe this about them because my value is I like to get all the information before I make, you know, an opinion or pass judgment. And so it was kind of interesting to learn that what you said was people will always reveal their values, you know, when you're asking them these questions or when they're sharing a point of view. I think that's just a really great insight.
And the way to push that from the communication perspective to improve collaboration, which I know is the two topics that you have a real appetite for, when you're in a meeting and we get stuck because people disagree, we often disagree because our values are in conflict and one person is not acknowledging the other person's values. You don't have to agree, but you have to acknowledge. If there's going to be a good collaboration, you as a human being on my team, need to know that I see you in your fullness in what's important to you. Once you feel safe and you know that I like you and I trust you and I see you in your fullness because of what's important to you, then we can talk about the thing between us, which is the problem that's out here. When people get into disagreement with each other, I start thinking you're the problem, as opposed to you and I together are working on something and the problem is in front of us. And that happens when people feel that the other person in the conversation isn't hearing where they're coming from. You don't have to agree to let the other person know that you heard it. You can acknowledge where they're coming from. You can acknowledge what's important to them.
That is really, really great point. And you're exactly right. Those are, you know, when I've seen some of the roadblocks in these collaborations, it is exactly that. The collaboration gets stuck because there's a disagreement. And it's difficult to kind of see through the weeds as to how to get past that. So what I'm hearing you say is that by acknowledging the values, so what are some strategies that you can use when you get there? Because I'm sure our listeners have experienced this where they've been in a collaboration and kind of hit that wall. What are some strategies that can help us get past that? Or do we go back to these questions that we're talking about? How do we move?
There's self-awareness and then there's social awareness. So starting with self-awareness, if I am in a conversation with a colleague and I'm feeling they don't agree with me, I think, you know, you start judging the other person. I think they're stupid. They're an idiot. Their idea is ridiculous. It's not going to work. And you're feeling agitated. Any of that emotional, I'm feeling upset, agitated, stubborn, cross my arms, raising my voice, having self-awareness that that is happening for you. That's the first step. Take a deep breath and get yourself back to your rational mind. If you're really emotional in a conversation, earlier you talked about that's the way you can talk to a toddler. We all bring our inner kid to work, right? We all bring our inner toddler to work. And when your inner toddler is having a temper tantrum, you're not going to have a productive conversation with your colleague. So having some self-awareness about, is my throat getting tight? Is my stomach getting tight? Are my cheeks getting hot? Am I suddenly talking louder and faster? Taking a breath and slowing that all down, that often in and of itself can calm the rest of the room down. Because when you start getting angry and defensive, the other person's going to start getting angry and defensive. So that's the self-awareness piece. The social awareness piece can be you're not getting angry and defensive, but you observe that your colleague might be getting angry and defensive. Then we have to pause the topic of what we're talking about and acknowledge the fact, wow, Joanne, I see you're really passionate about this. I can tell from your tone. I can tell from what you're how you're talking about. It's really important to you. Elaborate a little bit more about why that's really important to you. elaborate a little bit more about why that's really important to you as a version of a high gain question, even though it's not a question, it's a statement. You're giving the floor to the other person to let off some steam. You need to let them let off some steam because if they're in a high emotional state, they're by definition not in their rational mind. If they are by definition not in their rational mind, you will never come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to let the other person calm themselves down and then summarize and restate. All right, here's where I think we are. I am proposing XYZ. You're proposing ABC. At the beginning of the meeting, and this is why earlier I said it's important at the beginning to be explicit about the expectations of the meeting. At the beginning of the meeting, we decided our goal today was Q. So let's weigh what you're saying and what I'm saying against Q.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way to pull people back into a collaborative spirit.
Mm-hmm. Those are really, really awesome strategies. I love that. And Carol, I'm just writing quickly here as you're speaking, and I know we're recording this, but I love to take notes when I do my interviews. But you've given us some really, really good, statements or questions, these high gain questions that we can lean on. And so you just gave us another one, which is this idea of just stopping and saying, you know, can you elaborate a little more about why this is so important to you, you know, or why you are so passionate about this particular aspect or whatever it is that you're working on. I think that's just a really great tool, you know, to have at the ready for when you're seeing something like this take place within a collaboration. So I just love that.
Thank you.
Fabulous. So I wanted to talk just a little bit more about this idea of receiving, because that's where we just were when we were talking about listening and receiving. So I want to make sure that the listeners picked up on, of course, that's what we demonstrated through the exercise. But can you talk a little bit more about the importance of the receiving and then kind of how that closes? To me, that sort of is closing the loop, right, on listening. Am I interpreting that correctly?
I would say yes. I think listening and receiving are closely linked, that you're receiving the other person's information, not just what they're saying, but what's going on with their body language, what nonverbal things they might be communicating at the same time that they're communicating, whatever the topic at hand is. And then there is how you might respond. And so responding, if someone asks you a question, I often talk about responding when I'm teaching how to manage tough Q&A at the end of a presentation.
Mm.
Often what will happen for people where they start getting nervous, because they often give presentations to their boss. Their boss asks them a question and they're worried they won't know the answer. And so one way of responding to a question where you don't know the answer is just flat out saying, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is saying, I don't know, I'll get back to you. Often I'll hear people in meetings where the question might come from a colleague and not from a boss. And then they'll put them in the parking lot. Do you know this technique of the parking lot?
Mm-hmm.
But let's just park that for now. So let's go back to the four dimensions of executive presence. The fourth one is, what do people feel when they've had an interaction with you?
Mm-hmm.
If what they feel is you've just publicly parked them in front of their colleagues because their idea wasn't worthy to talk about right now at this moment in time, when you thought your idea was worthy to be talked about at this moment in time, that diminishes your presence and that diminishes credibility and trust with you and that person.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a fan of parking anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I am a fan of is looking at what time it is. We have 60 minutes dedicated to our topic today. We're at the 50-minute mark. You're bringing up something that is separate from what we agreed that we would talk about because we set our expectations at the beginning of the meeting. So I prefer to put people on the shopping list. That is such a great question. That is such a great thing to add. I'm going to put that on my shopping list and I'm going to go out and find more things about it. And next time I'm going to come back and we'll talk about that thing together. And then the person feels like what they said was interesting. And the reason that we're not going to talk about it now is not because they brought up something that should be parked because it was a verboten thing to discuss. It has to do with time. We only have 10 minutes left in the meeting. That's a very juicy topic. I don't know if 10 minutes is going to be enough. So let's shop for that next time. So those are different ways to think about responding. Here's one that works maybe 60% of the time. If you're in a meeting and somebody asks a question, they obviously don't know the answer. That's why they're asking the question. So if you also don't know the answer, you are in ignorance with them together. So instead of feeling like you have just been publicly interrogated and now you're stupid because you don't know the answer, you can band with the other person to say, what an interesting question. I don't know either, the magic word is either, now we are in it together. And because it's such an interesting question, I'm going to go find out and I'll bring it back next meeting. And then we can talk about how that might impact our project. Mm-hmm. So that's a way of responding that builds relationship, as opposed to a way of responding that would be, oh, gee, I don't know. And then you feel stupid and they are judging you.
That is such a great point. I love how you, just that little word, I don't know this either, that one little word, how that brings the other person right into it with you. And now, yes. And now we're collaborating to find the answer even.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love
science
that.
Science says that good science is not built on good answers. Good science is built on good questions. Mm. The same thing is true for business. Mm-hmm. Good business is built on good questions. We show up at work trying to be smart, so we think it's all about the answers. It's really all about the questions.
That's great. I love that. Well, Carol, this has been just so full of so many really wonderful lessons. And I so appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and to share your expertise. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you think is important that we still, you know, that we want to cover before we say goodbye, or any final words of wisdom to share?
That is a great high gain question. What have I missed?
Yes.
I feel like full. I would say my metaphor is I feel full, like after a good meal. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
That's fabulous. I love that. I love that metaphor. I feel full. Well, thank you so much. I knew this would be a fun conversation to have. And I so appreciate your time and your wisdom. And we'll look forward to collaborating with you again.
Thank you for listening all the way to the end of this week's episode. This gives me a chance to tell you about our influencer ebook that gives you the inside look at how my agency, Break the Ice Media, implements influencer marketing for our tourism clients. The book goes into detail on all of the tools that we use to find, vet, pitch, manage, and measure influencers. You'll find information on key follower benchmarks, how to vet influencer channels, getting your destination partners on board, creating itineraries, managing influencer expectations, and measuring for ROI. Visit breaktheicemedia.com/influencers to download the full ebook. That's breaktheicemedia.com/influencers.
It's time to hit the road again. Visit destinationontheleft.com during your travels for more podcasts, show notes, and fresh ideas.